You are listening to Green Left Radio, and on the line we have we're happy to have the Secretary of the Retail and Fast Food Workers Union, Josh Cullen, and we're going to be having a bit of a discussion with him about, because he's just recently wrote an article for Green Left, which is going to be coming up in the new issue, where he outlines some of his thoughts on this new ominous bill that has been passed in the Parliament. So, yeah, good morning, Josh.
Hey, good morning, Jacob. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I guess I want to kind of start off is, what are your kind of comments on this ominous bill, especially in terms of what has been passed in terms of the rights of casual workers? And also if you could actually even explain what has actually been passed and what are the implications of this sort of change that has been legislated for casual workers?
Yeah, sure. So the stripped back omnibus bill has really only a very narrow set of arrangements which are being put in place now, and they deal with casual employment. And for the first time in Australia, we now have a definition of what a casual employee is. And that definition doesn't connect with the lived reality or the workplace reality of the casual worker. It simply sets the casual employment relationship based on the decisions and desires of the employer at the time of appointing a casual worker. And the critical thing with that is that up until now, workers have been able to show that if they're not actually employed on a casual basis, that they are entitled to other things like annual leave and sick leave and redundancy rights. And this legislation is specifically designed to obliterate those rights, and to guarantee that a casual worker or a worker employed on a casual basis will be forever deemed so unless some other action is taken or they're able to arrange conversion of some sort. And so the legislation specifically deals with that issue and makes sure that no one can ever consider them not a casual worker unless it can be proved that what went on when they were first employed was somehow inappropriate. The other parts of the bill, there's two other parts. One is to give workers a right to be offered non-casual employment or to seek casual conversion. This is different from the current arrangements. Some workers will have, for the first opportunity, some form of right around conversion from casual employment, particularly in the university sector and particularly at large employers that have previously had enterprise agreements like Bunnings. The big difference, though, with this is that we're going to just see every employer argue that the workers just aren't eligible. There's no civil penalties for not complying with these terms. It's a fairly straightforward process for employers just to not offer, to not even mention it, and simply say that these workers were just not eligible. And so we will see that used in a mass way. But the big change is to really define what casual employment is. Now, the reason behind this change is that we've had over the last 3 or 4 years, one particular law firm, but others as well, start litigating on behalf of casual workers for the entitlements, the annual leave, the personal leave and the redundancy that they had never been given because they weren't at law workers employed in casual employment. They're actually part-time or full-time workers. And so this has been established 11 years ago, 12 years ago in the federal court, but those class actions that have been launched are now really presenting a serious concern to big business, and they admit that there's billions and billions of dollars owed, and so this legislation is about destroying those rights and retrospectively annihilating those wages actions.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that, Josh. Is this retrospective? How is that possible? How is that justified to retrospectively apply this new definition of casualisation to all of those backlog of cases?
Yeah, so the definition itself won't be retrospective, although it has application depending on what was put in employment contracts. But certainly the court actions that are about the claims for annual leave and sick leave is made retrospective. And we've already seen one of the law firms come out and suggest that that creates a sovereign risk for Australia, and that this such retrospective legislation is unlawful, and that they may be exploring that. It's just, I mean, this is just pandering to the biggest end of town. Employers like McDonald's, that has 85% of its workforce engaged on a casual basis. Now, we all know that McDonald's relies on those workers to turn up every week of every month of every year to keep their outlets open. Kmart, 85% of its workforce engaged on a casual basis. So these kinds of employers are concerned that workers will start making the demand for those wages. And so we have this ridiculous and unprecedented approach by the Parliament to retrospectively annihilate those stolen wages. But these are just stolen wages. No other way of describing them. They've stolen that annual leave. They've stolen those personal leave and redundancy. It's unheard of.
Yeah. I kind of want to go. I'll go into one of the other questions that you've sort of posed in your kind of article regarding the ACTU. But I guess just the first kind of question I kind of want to ask, just want to hear your quick thoughts on one thing. In terms of these kind of implications of these changes, one of the things that was quite clear from the COVID-19 kind of pandemic is that insecure and casualised kind of work is really not equipped at all to deal with a pandemic. You've had these constant issues of, like for example, the security guard who has to work kind of two jobs, and then you also have insecure employment being the root of a lot of unsafe kind of workplace practices by the bosses in terms of this controlling and containing the pandemic. Like, yeah, I kind of want to just hear your kind of comments in terms of the implications. Does any of this legislative kind of change actually deal with any of these issues that have been kind of posed by the pandemic, even from the perspective of the bosses trying to create a safe workplace and equip it for dealing with a pandemic?
In terms of dealing with the pandemic, the bosses have no interest in creating a safe workplace. I think we need to be probably direct about that. The very powerful, so the courts and parliaments and places of that nature, and the head offices of the bosses have an interest. Yeah, but these are types of places where no worker can enter without being security screened or x-rayed, and the everyday workplaces of workers, the bosses have no interest. I mean, these are the same bosses that get garments from Bangladesh. These are the same bosses that source products from overseas where abominable practices occur, and where workers are routinely injured, maimed and killed just going about their day's work. So these bosses have no genuine interest in safety of work. I mean, when it impacts upon their own personal safety. And so casual employment, you know, I've been working around casual employment now for 25 years, and it is in its very nature, it tears at the fabric of workers, of their collective nature in the workplace and of the broader society. Workers are unable to raise concerns about safety at work because they're in secure employment. They know, and we know, that when they raise these concerns, they will be sacked, they will lose shifts, and so the entrenching of that form of employment with no rights is abominable in the context of the pandemic. Some other countries don't have these types of employment, and the workforce is all the better for it, and wages are higher and conditions are better. But in Australia, this form of employment tears at all of those rights and the genuineness of having a healthy and safe workplace. And so in terms of the pandemic, no, these changes will entrench these issues. Now, that doesn't mean they didn't already exist. They did. The cases that were being run was a glimmer of hope in dealing with some of these issues. The workers weren't actually But the conversion arrangements and the other steps, as we've seen, they are just ineffective. Workers are scared about making those applications, and there are so many impediments once they do make those applications that it's very simple for bosses to deny them. Those arrangements that are now being legislated won't change that. What it does is it's another attack on those small glimmers of hope that we do have, that this legislation is now designed to avoid entirely.
Okay. Well, now going into guests, the next kind of point is I kind of want to hear in your article, you made, I guess, a bit of criticism of the ACTU's kind of role, in terms of the lead up in around this omnibus bill, in terms of the kind of negotiation kind of tactic. And I kind of want to hear you kind of elaborate more on your kind of views on what the ACTU's kind of role in this whole bill has been.
Yeah, sure. So RAFWA is not affiliated to the ACTU. ACTU hasn't invited it to affiliate. We just get on with the everyday work of organising in workplaces. What we were concerned with is that Christian Porter last year approached the ACTU and the SDA and sought for them to participate in this process of negotiating around five key themes, including casual employment and including enterprise agreements and other changes to industrial laws. And the ACTU openly embraced that opportunity. We're concerned that that came off the back of the failed Change the Rules campaign, and the ACTU is desperate for some kind of relevance. But we knew back in March and April last year that this government and big business had no interest in changing anything for the positive for working people in Australia. That's not like complex. That's not some far left conspiracy theory. This government has done all it can to attack workers. Big business does all it can to attack workers. So, these opportunities to sit down and break bread and have chocky bickies and have long lunches with, of all people, Christian Porter, we knew at the time was, not going to deliver anything for workers. And in fact, just demobilized the labor movement for 9 months. Throughout the pandemic, when we should have been building a radical and active campaign to take on these challenges, to organise workers in casual employment and ensure that they had a fighting voice this year when they needed to fight back against these changes and these attacks, which will literally cost casual workers in Australia tens of billions of dollars in lost annual leave, personal leave and redundancy. And so we were saying that last year, so were some other unions. They were heavily critical as well. The ACTU didn't listen. And what we heard over that period was that they were trying to negotiate some special arrangements, effectively for the SDA, to be able to go back to its business model of enterprise agreements, which cut the minimum condition. And so we were very, very disappointed by that. And at its core, in terms of casual employment and workers in precarious employment, at its core, there is no voice for them in the Australian labour movement. The workers in casual employment are so underrepresented in any of the genuine democratic unions that there is no rising of workers in precarious employment to the leadership of unions and to the leadership of the movement. There isn't even some kind of caucus where there is a group of activist leaders who are able to speak to these issues that affect millions of Australians, millions of working people. And instead we have the charity of the aristocracy of the labour movement speaking on behalf of those in this form of employment. And those representatives, whether they be well-meaning or not, have no real connection with precarious employment and the woeful experience that inflicts upon workers. So we're deeply concerned that Australia and all working people need to have representatives from the shop floor experiencing those real issues, and they need to be organised. And so my point in the article really is that there is no voice at the moment for those workers, and we shouldn't be listening to anyone that wants to give charity. We should be listening to those workers. And it's urgent for the movement in Australia to elevate their voices, organise those workers, and ensure that they speak on behalf of themselves in a fight which affects us all.
Zane, did you have a question, extra question you wanted to ask? And we can probably conclude this interview soon.
I wonder what's the RAFWU strategy for cohering that kind of fighting wing of the labour movement on this question.
Yeah, great question. And I think our fight really starts in our own backyard. You know, we're 4.5 years old. We're trying to organise around casual employment every day of every week. It is so hard. We have a dedicated activist caucus organiser who's doing some fantastic work, Tilda, with workers. We've reached out to Kapow, who are doing some great organising around the NTU sector, so universities, with casual and precarious workers. And that organisation, Kapow, is going to be speaking at a conference or an event we're having next week for members who are engaged in casual and precarious employment. So we're trying to build up a semi-autonomous caucus of workers in casual employment. We also run local-based activist campaigns. So we're hopeful to be able to share more of those stories, but whether it's a bookshop that's staffed entirely by workers who are in casual employment and trying to have them take direct action towards securing their employment, or whether it's a fantastic group of young women working at a supermarket who are being sexually harassed, being able to collectively march in on their boss, demand that perpetrators be sacked and that managers be held accountable. We're trying to run more and more of these kinds of actions and events and elevate their voice and elevate and educate them in the power of their collective action, and build that semi-autonomous caucus so that we're able to, down the track, in the very near future, months, not decades, we're able to ensure that they speak on behalf of these issues for RAFWU. And we hope that not only empowers them in their future work that might be beyond our sector and getting involved in other unions, we hope that also sends a great example to other organisations that they can do this and that they can have these workers speak on these issues and take action on these issues.
All right. Well, I think we might go and conclude this interview, Josh. I think you've given sort of great answers to all the kind of questions we're going to ask. Do you, have any final comments you'd like to make?
Well, look, I think the only thing I'd like to say at this point is that any precarious workers who are listening and who may be a little disillusioned with what's going on in their union, we just encourage them to get involved. Certainly if they're in retail and fast food, reach out to us, get involved. We want to find ways to support, activate, and organise your co-workers. And, you know, it really requires a community of such workers right across sectors to support each other and be the groundswell in what we need to radically change this.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Josh. I definitely think that's a kind of good message to end on. And yes, especially if you are a casual worker who is working in the fast food and retail industry, I definitely recommend, if you haven't already, getting in contact with the Retail and Fast Food Workers Union.
Thanks again, Josh.